Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening.
And this week, Fee and I are in conversation with Lily Silverton.
Lily, you spent over 10 years as a highly successful fashion and arts journalist, and you then pivoted into coaching. And should I add, you're also a stress management consultant and a highly successful speaker, columnist, and podcaster. But from what I gather, you had a real aha moment when you realized the life-changing power of helping your clients identify what their true priorities are. In other words, figuring out what it is we really want, which sounds simple enough as a question, but actually isn't always the case. Can you pick up from here and join the dots from your work as a coach to developing the priorities method, which is your proprietary brand name and approach? And Fee and I both love the journals too, by the way.
Oh, thank you, Sophie. That's a very, very kind introduction, and I'm really glad you both like the journals. Okay, sure. So I had a bit of an aha moment myself with my own career while I was working in fashion. As you said, I was in fashion for about 10 years on the feature side at magazines. And when I was in Paris in my early 30s, I started to think, is this for me? And I had this aha moment of being in a meeting and just suddenly thinking this just doesn't fit me anymore, and that my priorities had shifted, and that this goal that I'd been working towards, this idea of editor or editor-in-chief, which now looked much closer than it ever had, I realized it wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't where I saw myself in 10 years' time. So it took a couple of years to transition out, but I had an amazing boss at the time, Rank. I was working with Rankin, the photographer at Hunger, and he gave me some time off to go to India to do my yoga teacher training. I'd done yoga since I was a kid and really loved it. So I did that. And then I became really interested very quickly in the thought repatterning side of yoga. I'd had bad mental health when I was younger and eating disorders, and I never really believed that I could change the thoughts in my mind, that I had to live with them. And when I learned all this through yoga, this idea of the power of your thoughts, and not necessarily that you can change everything with your thoughts, but that you have autonomy, some autonomy over them in various situations, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole with that, and that led me into mindfulness and coaching. And then I coached for a couple of years, and I coached from the goal setting approach, which is generally what you're trained in. I trained as a stress coach initially, actually, and then moved into life coaching, trained in this goal setting approach, worked with clients in a goal setting approach, worked with myself in a goal setting approach, and just came to start to realize that it wasn't quite hitting the mark for me. It didn't quite resonate in lots of ways. And I'd been thinking about this idea of priorities for some time. I actually had a podcast that I'd started in 2020 called Priorities, which interviewed people about the things that were important to them. And I guess through doing that, this just came more and more at the forefront of my mind. And I started to think, oh, how can I organize things a little bit more for my clients so that priorities are at the forefront instead of goals, and that we think about maybe prioritizing more helpful thoughts and how impactful that can be, or prioritizing habits, or generally just having priorities as the foundation for what you want and your goals, and how that can be more sustainable, both in terms of, you know, having that really good solid foundation so that you know you're building them on the right stuff underneath. And also when you don't achieve your goals, because we don't sometimes, that's a very real thing that happens to a lot of us in life for various reasons, that then you've got those priorities and values underneath which underpin it, so that you don't have that sense of crushing disappointment. You can connect more with your priorities and what's of value to you.
You've also spoken a lot about burnout. Can you talk to us more about our culture of busyness and how this interplays with things like our sleep, our nervous system, our guts? I know, Sophie, you've had previous experience of burnout as well, and I think I have, although it was undiagnosed and not really spoken about. More tangibly, though, Lily, what seems to work on a very practical level in terms of both your experience, but also that of your clients?
It's a really good question. Of course, we all know the very boring, obvious stuff, like ideally getting as much sleep as you are able to. But I know that sleep for a lot of people is very challenging. And the worst thing when you're not getting sleep is to be told you need more sleep. So definitely those things can be helped without it to some extent. You know, not being on your phone all the time, nourishing food, whatever that means to you, some balance, all really important. But I think what I've seen certainly personally and with clients is what works for you is what works for you. It's very much an individualized approach, and it's about what you can maintain and what you can stick with, because we can give so many suggestions about what can help someone, but if they're not going to do those things, then they're not going to help. So it's very much like, what's your maintenance and what's your level and where can you meet yourself at where you can maintain something? Like, there are practical tips I share with clients, like prioritizing what's important to you and what's nourishing to you, and ensuring that you are putting some of that stuff at the forefront, so that maybe you can't change how busy you are, and maybe you can't change your necessarily your stress levels initially, and you can't change how your the hours that your boss expects you to keep. But if you are at the same time nourishing yourself in other ways, then you're going to be balancing that a little bit. Time management can be very helpful for many people. Things like habit stacking, where you stack a habit onto an existing one in order to support yourself a little bit. So that might be take 5 deep breaths while you're boiling the kettle or something like that. So something where you're connecting with that idea of regulating your nervous system and showing up for yourself and being there for yourself. Prioritizing, oh, it's a broken record, doing the things that work for you. There's lots of interesting stuff out there about what works. Fermented food in terms of lowering cortisol levels works for some people, cold water dips, swimming in terms of cortisol. I mean, one of the things that we don't think about very often when we think about our nervous system and cultural busyness and all of that is all of the studies back up. One of the most useful things for stress is connectedness with other people. So we often think that self, what can I do to improve the self? How can I get my routine down or whatever it is? But actually, a lot of the studies prove that the more that we can connect with others, we are designed as humans, our nervous systems are designed to be regulated by others and to regulate others as well. So should we think outside ourselves a little bit? Should we be looking at removing our identity from the idea of being really busy and maybe seeing how we could help others? Like, maybe actually I'm very busy, but can I find a moment to help others who don't have the resources that I do? And maybe that will actually make me feel less busy. And there is that, which I had definitely when I worked at magazines, that idea of your identity tied up with always being busy and always being stressed. That person, yeah. You ask them and it's like, how are you? And they're like, I'm so busy. I'm so stressed.
Like a badge of honor.
Yeah, a badge of honor. And you know, the way the brain works, the more you say that to yourself, the more true it becomes.
So yeah.
I'm not saying it's not true when you say it, but definitely something worth interrogating for yourself if that's you.
So interesting. Thank you.
Can we discuss something which has certainly been an important lesson for me, and that is people pleasing?
Yes, we can. Where are you at with that, Sophie?
Much better at it. I used to be putting everyone else's desires and needs above my own. And of course, it's lovely to do nice things for other people. And that's also part of my nature, is to do nice things for other people. But you can only do that if you've refilled your own bank first.
Absolutely. And I think it is that thing of wanting to do nice things for other people, hopefully naturally, you know, because you're a lovely person and you have that inclination. But that if you are overgiving, then it's not really nice anymore. Because if you are giving from a place where you don't have anything to give, then it's not necessarily a kind act all round. We have an evolutionary inclination towards not saying no to people. We don't want to offend them, because offending them could lead us to be rejected by them. And back in the day when we used to live and hunt in tribes, if we were rejected from a group, then that effectively meant death, because we couldn't operate or survive as individuals. So we have this very inbuilt, ingrained inclination towards saying yes, which sometimes we need to argue with and overcome. I think for a lot of people as well, they may have had it from childhood in terms of believing that saying no was bad. Priorities are very helpful here, because if we're thinking about, like, am I prioritizing myself in this situation as well? And also, like, am I showing respect to the other person? Because if we're never prioritizing ourselves, if we are giving everything to them and letting ourselves be drained, we can also, you know, we're creating great imbalance there in our relationships. And I think we can have that question of who am I pleasing in this situation by always prioritizing others? By, I don't know, some people have this inclination towards martyrdom in terms of offering and giving, and it creates an imbalance in relationships. So I think there's a real respect all round to be had by putting in those boundaries where possible. And, you know, sometimes people will need more or less, and those boundaries will fluctuate, and that's very normal and expected. But putting them in roughly for yourself, so you know, that you're not necessarily always saying no to people, because that, you know, you wouldn't really be a great friend or family member if you did, but having that ability to say no and that capacity and understanding when and how you need to say no.
And getting comfortable with saying no and your own personal way of saying no, so it feels like a good fit for ourselves. We'd also love to discuss this idea of having a TAFES career, that many of us are multi-potentialites, that I've pinched that phrase from a TED Talk. So if you can look into in the show notes, people who aren't suited to doing just one thing.
I think I've always been like that to some extent. I studied politics and philosophy and specialised in global health at university, which comes in probably more useful now than it did in my fashion career. But I always did all sorts of things alongside, even when I was at magazines, I was doing things. I taught dance on the side to make extra money and so on. So I feel like I've always had a lot going on. I think, you know, most people are complex and have a wide range of interests and skills. And we live in a world now which is so intense and complex, but we do have the opportunity to do a lot, at least. It doesn't work for everyone and it can be quite challenging. But I think for some people, the more that they can spread their identity and understanding of the self in terms of what they do, that can be really beneficial. You definitely do it, don't you, Fiona?
Yeah, and always have, even before it was a thing. But I think the difference is that I used to feel a lot of shame about that, because it feels as though if you're doing one thing, are you not giving enough to the other thing? Or who are you? And are you really committed? And are you job hunting or project jumping or whatever? So there was shame attached to that. And now it feels still a little bit shameful to go, oh, I do this as well, particularly if it's something quite different. But now I go back to the people-pleasing thing. I think, no, this is just who I am, and it, for the exact reasons that you said. Sophie, I think a lot of people would be surprised that actually you are as well.
My week's very varied. You know, yes, I have my clinics and I spend 3 days a week with patients, but the rest of the time I might be writing something, I might be lecturing or preparing lectures, I might be filming or recording podcasts, I might be doing brand work. So I've got lots of different things which are loosely linked, and then of course my study stuff as well. So I've always been someone who thrives on being challenged in different ways.
Yeah, Fiona, what you said about shame, I can definitely relate to that. When I worked in magazines, I was definitely not telling people that I was teaching dance on the side.
Yeah.
Fashion magazines are notoriously underpaid. And I wanted people to take me very seriously as a fashion editor.
Yeah.
I was quite young for my job as well.
Yeah.
So I definitely wasn't sharing that at the time. And even when I started teaching yoga, and I really tried to put down writing for a while because I wanted to be really focused and seen as just doing that.
Mm.
But by now, I definitely feel more integrated,
yeah.
I guess.
Lily, I know you work with corporations as well as individuals. So, for example, you work closely with brands such as Soho House. What have you learned about being in business? So, for example, we previously interviewed Maxine Laceby, who's the founder of Absolute Collagen, and got some great advice on things like digital marketing and how much it really costs, and also advice on building a client or customer base. What's your experience been like as a startup? And again, can you offer any practical tips or ideas?
My experience has been probably very typical. I struggle with all the normal things that a small business encounters, from understanding how to do my accounts once I went from being a sole trader to having a company, which is still a mess as far as I can tell. And, you know, the balance also of running a company whilst having a family. Balance, I say balance. Don't know what it is, not a balance. I think actually it's probably quite helpful when I talk to clients, especially maybe some of the smaller ones. So, you know, it's worked with Soho House and their teams there, which has been incredible, but that's so, so different from what I do. But I have also worked with much smaller brands over the years, and they've been really interesting in terms of how they operate, what they think about marketing, how they treat their teams, how they manage things, how they approach their brand, and where their hard lines are and things like that have been really, really, really interesting. And then I guess in terms of the priorities method and where if I'm working with brands or trying to advise myself, which we always know is the hardest thing, then it's really what's important to you. What do you have that clear idea of what's important to you? Do you have your idea of your mission? Do you have your why? And then are you staying aligned with that? Can you use it to really be your GPS and not getting distracted by too much competition, which is always a challenge for a small business? And finding and defining that own idea and measure of success, whatever it means to you. So that's very much been how I work with clients and how I try my level best to work with myself.
So can you talk to us, Lily, about your priorities and how does this reflect in your daily habits? So in other words, can you capture a sort of day in the life for us, from food and exercise to supplements, phone use, like basically your habits, your priorities?
Okay. So, I mean, my friends hate it when I say this, okay? But I'm one of those people who wakes up at 6 a.m. and it really doesn't suit everyone. I do not recommend it for clients unless they are a morning person and it really works for them. But for me, I am a morning person. It really works for me. I haven't always done it. I've got two relatively small children. And when they weren't sleeping well, I wasn't doing it. And when they don't sleep now, I probably don't do it as well, mostly. But I get up at 6 a.m. and I have like an hour of meditation and either yoga, Pilates or exercise, ideally before the kids get up, or if not, they're up with my husband for a bit. January, I started creatine just before I exercise. I don't know whether it makes a difference, but I'm giving it a try because I've hit 40. What else do I do? I balance on one leg while I brush my teeth, 1 minute on each side.
Is that for brain health? I think it is, isn't
it? Yeah, it's for brain health. It's for body health. I've really noticed I've always had incredible balance and I practice quite a lot of it through yoga, but it is getting that little bit incrementally worse or changing, maybe I'll say. Mm. So balancing on one leg while brushing my teeth. So also you have to pay a little bit of extra attention when you're balancing. So it keeps you focused and not thinking about too much stuff. What else do I do? Mothermaid. Do you know Mothermaid? They do adaptogenic mushrooms. They sent me some recently. They sponsored a retreat I did. So I've been trying those, but I can't report yet on how effective they are. I'm taking their AM capsules. It's a really, really lovely brand. Mm. Okay, so then I take the kids to school or I start work, depending on who's taking the kids. And then I put collagen in my coffee. And I feel like that does make a difference. I've been doing that again since January. I'm such a cliche sometimes. I use the Will powders, the Davinia Taylor one,
yeah,
which has no flavor. So any other collagen I've had before, I've been sent loads and loads over the years. And this one has zero flavor, which I really like. The Ancient Brave also is actually quite nice. Mm-hmm. And then breakfast is generally yogurt with loads of nuts and a bit of fruit or toast. Once a week, I go for a cold swim. I call it a swim. It's not a swim at this time of year. It's a dip in cold water. So I go to the heath, either to the ponds or the Lido. And sometimes I'll use the sauna as well, which is very nice. Supplements wise, what do I have? I use Heights, who I think are great. I use their Brain Food Multi and I use their probiotic. And at night, I use their magnesium. And I think that's made a really big difference to my sleep. I've tried various magnesiums at various times. And that this one, just before I go to sleep, makes a big difference. What else? Generally, I'll have like a salad, big salad for lunch that I'll make. Generally, I'm working from home, so I'm a big salad at lunch. Supper, very flexible. I try and have some carbs at night because I've heard lots of studies about how good they are for sleep and how important that is. My days are really varied, like we spoke about before. Sometimes I have clients. Most days I have clients. I work with one-to-one clients on Zoom. I also see some pro bono clients with a domestic violence charity in person. Then I might be doing workshops or an event and then planning, writing, pitching, Sophie, what it's like, all of that. And ideally, I'd be present with the kids sort of at the end of the day for their swim lessons or something like that. And I'm almost always around for bedtime, as I'm running events or seeing friends sometimes, and I try to be asleep by 10:30 latest, ideally, even earlier.
Sophie, can I throw the same question at you in terms of your priorities and your daily habits on a very practical level? I mean, obviously, I know quite a few of them because of the podcast and just knowing you, but it would be good to get a little recap of like your best habits that you always stick to. Or best, yeah, subs or whatever.
I really think supplements should be bespoke. So there are key ones that everyone can take, but a supplement routine, a good one, I think is really tailored to you. But for me, I actually get up at 5. Well, sometimes I snooze once. I aim to start my day with meditation. I cold plunge every morning. I have a coffee with collagen in, like you, Lily, and again, an unflavored one. I then exercise at 7 o'clock every weekday. And then after that, get showered, get ready, and start my work day. Breakfast for me, so nutrition and my health is super important. I tend to make a homemade chia seed pudding, which I top with milled flaxseed and cacao nibs and nuts and some sort of fruit, depending on the season. I'll change that up. And then during the day, obviously, super busy, usually on the go all the time. Lunch, again, usually a big salad. I'll top it with some healthy protein, some salmon or some prawns. Then afternoon work. And in the evening, one day a week, I do go and do reformer Pilates. 7's early for me to be back home. So by the time I'm home, I'll have dinner. And again, like Lily, I'm not afraid of carbs in the evening. They're brilliant for sleep. I take supplements with every meal and I actually try to get into bed by 10 so that I have at least a 7-hour sleep opportunity. If I'm getting into bed later, I'll push my alarm a little bit later. So sleep has to be a core pillar for me. So I guess my key things are health, and by that I include supplementation, good sleep, a career that I love, fulfilling relationships in my life, and healthy nutrition. Lily, I know that like me, you're also a fan of things like cold plunging, breath work, meditation. And as you said, you're also a yogi. So if you had to keep just one of these four, which would it be?
Sophie.
I know, I'm the same. I
can't choose. Kind of a question is that? It would probably be yoga, honestly. I could like sneak in meditation into that because obviously it's you're only doing the yoga to sit for the meditation. I very much feel like meditation is like brushing my mental health, like I brush my teeth. It's that daily practice that I don't always really want to do, but is really helpful at keeping my mind healthy. Yoga is one of the greatest loves of my life. I've done it since I was very young and I change a lot what I do and how much I do and everything. But I think that would probably be the one if I had to choose just one. What would you choose?
Oh, gosh. Which one would I choose? It would probably be exercise. Because again, like you, I sort of weave moments of stillness into my day, even sometimes when I'm driving. So I think although it's not true meditation, I can weave that in other ways. So if I really had to dedicate just one thing, it would be my exercise routine. And it's also the single thing we know from an evidence-based standpoint is most important for healthy lifespan and longevity.
Really interesting. Lily, I find myself, like lots of people, being so overwhelmed by my inbox and my to-do list. One tip that I want to offer everyone is to set up a separate email address for all online deliveries, because brands these days will find so many reasons to spam you, even if you've opted out of marketing. So that's been quite transformational for me in terms of inbox management. Do you get overwhelmed as well? And how do you manage your email and your to-do?
I love that tip, Fiona. My husband does that as well. He's got one of those. I should do it too. Yes, of course I get overwhelmed. Absolutely. I am my first student. I don't think anyone goes into this kind of line of work unless they need it themselves. So yes, I absolutely can get overwhelmed. I do have a great stack of tools to draw on when I do, which I feel fortunate for. So I guess my first tip for myself and for anyone, for you guys or anyone listening who feels overwhelmed by their to-do list, is to really accept that you are never, ever going to complete your to-do list. I think we have this idea that we can, it's like this idea of inbox zero.
Yeah.
We have this idea that we can get to this point, but the moment you finish your to-do list or the moment you tick something off, something else comes back on. It's like a game of whack-a-mole, I always say. And that the more that we can accept that idea that I'm not going to win at this, that life is always going to win, that there's always going to be things that maybe hang on there for too long, maybe things that hang on there forever that I look at and think, oh, why haven't I done that? And so on. And so it's more about accepting that and having good processes and tools around that to support yourself in the way that your brain works. So for me, I clear my email as often as possible. It does work for me. You know, I open all the emails that need replying to and I minimize them. So I've got them there. But otherwise, I try to keep things fairly clear. And then I group things together. So I'll group like bills together and I'll only pay those at a certain point in the week. I won't pay them as they come in. I group requests for coaching and I'll reply to them every couple of days together. unless I've got a very free day and I'm on my computer, in which case I will reply quicker. If I've got clients, I reply to them. But yeah, trying to group things a little bit so that I'm not feeling like I'm constantly reacting to what's coming onto my plate, but rather acting according to my own set out for that timetable for that week and where I've got space and time.
If you think back to when we were all children, if you wanted to communicate to someone, you either picked up the phone to a landline, and if they were home, you spoke to them. If they weren't, you left an answer phone message and waited till they could ring you back and you were at home. Mm. Or you wrote a letter, which would then arrive in the post, and you'd have the time for someone to write a response and send it back to you. And everything was much slower. And now we're in this age where everyone expects everything immediately. And I think that can make it really hard and put a lot of pressure on people. I have all notifications turned off on everything, every device I have, and so that I can choose when I look. And that makes a real difference for me.
Mm, absolutely. I also have this thing of like other people's urgence is not your urgent. So just because someone else is, I get lots of emails which are from people who want me to write about their things. And generally, it's not something I would write about anyway. So they're not emailing the right person. To them, it's very urgent and they'll chase me, but it's not my urgent at all.
Completely agree. So apart from friends and family, who inspires you?
People who lift others up, I think, inspire me. Anyone who makes it a priority to be consistently kind in what can be a very challenging world and makes their way in this world with that kindness and that dedication to others. So I'm on the board of a charity called Magic Breakfast, and I work, as I mentioned earlier, with other charities. And really, it's the people who run those charities and the people who are very much on the ground, I find, and it's mostly women, I find incredibly inspiring. You know, the case support workers that work with domestic violence, who are their clients, I find them incredibly inspiring, the way in which they dedicate their life to supporting others.
That's really inspiring. And we'll link into Magic Breakfast. In terms of your daily routine, or going back to your daily routine, we also want to ask you about skincare. What brands do you love? What brands are you loyal to? And this is not just skincare, but hair care, nail care, bath oils, anything at all. And also, do you have any regular treatments or tweakments?
Yeah, so I knew you were going to ask this because I listened to the other one. So I had to go and make a list because my memory is terrible. Go and have a look at why. So I use a pie oil cleanser, and I found that one to be the best one at removing absolutely everything and doesn't irritate my skin or my eyes. Maybe the only eye makeup remover I've ever found which doesn't irritate me. I use a Tatcha moisturizer, which I love. I think it's Dewy Glow or something along those lines, but I had really good experience with. I use Wilder Botanics. I use their oils on my face and their bath salts as well, which are absolutely incredible. I use a bit of Sunday Riley, the blue oil, as a kind of retinol, very light retinol. And I use a Barbara Sturm eye cream, the very basic eye cream, which again, I found is the only one that doesn't irritate my eyes at all. Treatments. I go to this place in Tufnell Park that does a head spa, which is one of my favorite things I've ever had in my entire life, which
What's
is like an hour
like
an and a half.
Indian head massage?
It's so much more than that. I really recommend it. They do them all over London, but there's just one that I go to. But it's like the good bit of when you go to the hairdressers where they massage your head, and it's just that for 90 minutes with like various cleansers, and you get a face mask. And it's one of the only treatments I've ever fallen asleep in. I don't fall asleep very easily if I'm not in a bed, and it's one of the only ones. So I absolutely love it. I send everyone there. I have facials with Taryn Warren, who I've been seeing for some time, and she's wonderful. I haven't seen her in ages, actually, so I should book in with her. I go to Martine de Richeville. They do like lymphatic treatments, but that it's a lot more than that. It's a very mind-body connection, and I see Julian, one of their founders there. And I love going to the physio or the osteo or any sort of massage or reflexology. I really love any of those treatments. I used to get acupuncture, but I haven't had it in ages. I don't know whether I think I connect more. If I've got an hour, I want like a massage versus acupuncture. But I did have it when I was pregnant, and my father was very unwell at the same time as I was pregnant with my second. And I saw Ross Barr, who did a lot of calming treatments for me then to help me along. I get a little bit of Botox between my eyebrows. I haven't had it for a while. And I think that's about it.
Can we also talk about brain health? Because I know you play the piano and this is such a good habit for healthy brain as well. Are you doing or taking anything else to keep your brain healthy?
I love playing piano, as you say, and I definitely feel the impact that it has. So I often play before, my mornings are always writing. So that's always my, when, in terms of my work day, I don't see clients in the morning. That's my time for really focused, dedicated work. And generally at the moment, that's writing. But I'll always sit and play 15 minutes of piano before I write because I feel like it gets my mind working. There's little, you know, I play, but I'm practicing pieces also. I don't know. So I'm failing constantly and trying to learn them, which is really, we all know, is really good for the brain. So I definitely feel that impact of them when I sit down. I feel a lot readier for that focused work. Yes, I talked about standing on one leg. I'm thinking about that brain health. The connection with others really does play at the forefront of my mind. What you said earlier, Sophie, about exercise. These are all things that I think are the very basic building blocks in terms of what we can do. That, yeah, connection with others, movement, sleep, all sounds very boring, but it's done enough, really impactful. Anything you can recommend, Sophie?
So for me, I still occasionally play piano and I miss playing more, but I find I struggle with the time. I am learning a new language, or should I say reinforcing a language I learnt many years ago, Spanish. So I do a little bit of that every morning. Meditation, I think, is amazing for brain health. There's certain supplements I take, like lion's mane, which are great for brain function, and also a supplement called Nuchido Time Plus, which is amazing for my cognitive health. I also quite like the standing on one leg while you're brushing your teeth trick. I remember watching that on Alice Hart Davis's Instagram at some point and thinking, oh, I like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes brain health exercises specifically, and there's an app called Brain HQ, which was recommended to us by an amazing neurologist. So sometimes I'll sit and do that. So yeah, they're probably my main ones. I love to read as well.
It's very much just like, how can we stretch ourselves? How can we continue to push the boundaries a little
exactly. bit? Exactly. And I think also, again, another one with me is I study a lot. So at the moment, I'm towards the end of my second year of an MBA with Imperial. I'll probably take a breather for a year, but then I know my brain will be going, right, what are we going to learn next?
Mm.
And it's that whole commitment to lifelong learning, I think, makes a huge difference.
Mm. Is it Jay Shetty that says every year he aims to learn something, love something, and launch something, which I think is great. And Sophie, your brain health episode last year was one of your biggest ever eps, so we'll send that to you, Lily, but we'll link into it as well because there was just so much there. So Lily, where in the UK can you recommend for true rest and relaxation? So either a hotel or a spa, a town, a village, all of the above, like where do you go to really switch off in the UK?
Well, I went to the Carinthia in London a few weeks ago, which I absolutely loved. So I took, everyone thinks that because of the work that I do, that I'm very ready and focused with my goals on January 1st, but I'm really not. January is such a busy month for me. And then I've got family time is so important over the holidays that really I don't get going with any of my own personal resolutions, thoughts, whatever you want to call them, goals for the year until the end of January, early February. So I took myself off to the Carinthia to do my own journaling in the Priorities Method journal and have a morning of relaxation, which I absolutely loved. So I would recommend that because that's fresh in my mind. And outside of London, I think both Heckfield and Tyme are really special places in terms of that ability to switch off and separate from what's going on and have that connection with nature, especially as someone who grew up in the city, who lives in the city. Yeah, Heckfield and Tyme would be mine.
I think they're two of your favourites, aren't they, Sophie?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find out more at lilysilverton.com. Do also follow Lily over on Instagram. You can find her at lily_silverton. And I would 100% recommend her journal, The Priorities Method. You'll find various exercises to help you discover your priorities and goals across all 52 weeks of the year, plus reviews and mindfulness check-ins. It basically helps you to do Lily's method and is such incredible value. I know it's helped so many people feel more productive and less overwhelmed. So do head over to Lily's website, buy it for yourself, and we'll also link into it on the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us, Lily.
Oh, thank you guys. Thanks for having me.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com, and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.